evening, everyone. It's so lovely to see you here, and we welcome you to the Latino Outreach Council Candidates Forum. This is one of four that we are doing this. Which will be asked of the candidates this evening. My name is Jacqueline Frederick. I am the chair of the Latino Outreach Council. The Latino Outreach Council was formed in 1994. We are a nonpartisan, nonpolitical, a nonprofit group, and our mission is the outreach to the Latino community and to help to engage them in the civic and community affairs of this beautiful county in which we live. In so doing, we offer Spanish translation. We do promote all of our events in the Hispanic community on Spanish television and on engaging the members of our Hispanic and Spanish-speaking community into local government and civic and community affairs. We have a very special event coming up that I'm going to take this opportunity to advertise because it is the Fiesta Latina. This is our first Cinco de Mayo dinner dance that we are doing. It will be at the Edwards Barn this Friday, May 2nd, from 6 to 10, and it's mariachis, DJ, beautiful catered Mexican dinner. If you'd like to go, we do have tickets at the we know that many students find that for financial reasons they cannot attend college or trade or tech school, and we want to do our part to make a positive difference in young people's lives. So we hope that you will support the event by attending or providing us with a donation for our scholarship fund. This evening we will have a question and answer session with our two candidates for 2nd District Board of Supervisors, Merle Clift and Bruce Gibson. We have some distinguished panelists with us this evening who have volunteered their time to we have a email address, and we received many of the questions through there, so these are questions basically from you, the voters of this county. At this time, I would like to introduce our panelists and thank them again for volunteering their time this evening. The panelists did not draft the questions. As I said, they came from the public, but we are asking them to pose the questions just to make it interesting this evening. So I'm going to start with the panelist to my right, and that is John Eric Storm. I know him as a colleague and an attorney in San Luis Obispo County. I'd also like to introduce you to Helen Dario. Helen Dario is from Napomo. She is a retired school teacher from the greater LA area, El Monte High School, and she currently serves on the board of the Dana Adobe Napomo Amigos, the organization that is responsible for the historic site where the Dana Adobe now sits in Napomo. She and her husband, Al, co-served as presidents of that organization last year and are now center of me of our group is Carrie Friend. Carrie is going to be our assistant timer this evening. She is an Estero Bay resident. She holds an undergraduate and graduate degree from UCLA, Montana State, and Cal Poly State University. She is an instructor for Cal Poly and Cuesta College and serves as a local school board president and believes in transparent government. She and her husband of 20 years have one daughter who will attend high school next year. Next, we have James Brescia. Mr. Brescia has been a San Luis Obispo County elect for our county superintendent of schools position. Dr. Brescia holds degrees from UC San Diego, Cal Poly, CSU Dominguez Hills, and UC Santa Barbara. Jim and his wife of 26 years have two daughters. One just completed her degree at UC San Diego, and the other is a freshman at UC Santa Cruz. Thank you and welcome, Dr. Brescia. Next we have Cecilia Merrill. Cecilia Merrill is a member of our board of the Latino Outreach Council. She has been a citizen of the County of SLO for the past 20 years. On the board of the Latino Outreach Council. She is a patient services representative for the County Department of Health. So let's give a round of applause and thank our panelists for joining us today. Yes. So our format for this evening will be that each of the candidates will be given an opening statement, 3 minutes each. Afterwards, we have a series of questions that they will be asked to answer. They will have 2 minutes to respond to each question. So with that, we'll get started. And was there a draw on who's going to go? In that case, I am going to make the decision, and I'm going to ask Mr. Gibson to give us his three-minute opening.
And it's always hard to be on the other side of the three-minute timer, but here we go. I want to thank you, Jackie, and the Latino Outreach Council for organizing this. In my time in office, it's been a pleasure to work with the council as they celebrate Hispanic, Latino culture and heritage and engage a community that's a vibrant part of our expected to speak to why am I running, and in fact that answer to me is very simple. There's a whole lot of good things going on in this county. As we look back in the 7+ years that I've been in office, there has been a whole lot accomplished, and we'll be certainly touching on a variety of those things, from the wastewater project in Los Osos to the new library in Cambria to getting the county through the worst economic times of any of our lifetimes without layoffs or significant cuts in programs. We have been through tough. We've started over the next years. I'm very much interested in wanting to see us bring to fruition a lot of things that have been set up in the last couple of years. In a way, I want to enjoy the good times as we come through these tough economic times. We're seeing a lot of vibrancy, and as I think about my job and I think about public service, I really want to touch tonight on a number of different themes: vision, leadership, and service. And I'm running because I have a vision of the future of this county that's bright, and bright for everyone. Pump a lot of water, but bright for everyone. And we can talk a lot about how we're reforming criminal justice, how we're reforming health care, how we're working on economic strategy, and I see that we can have a very bright future. Leadership is the persuasion of making others get behind the vision. And I have been involved in a number of important leadership roles, both on the board and other boards that I serve on. Our Council of Governments, which took on Caltrans over the quality or lack thereof of surfacing they did on Highway 1. On LAFCO, our Local Agency Formation Commission, where I was very much involved in the question of urban sprawl and an honest accounting of water. And finally, service. And service is extremely important to me. It is a source of considerable pride to me that our office is remarkably responsive to constituents. We get folks' problems solved, whether they are big problems or small problems, whether these are constituents or even not constituents. And service is really just the hard work of getting the job done, taking the meetings, making the phone calls, and leading forward. So with that, I look forward to the questions this evening and a lively conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And now, Merle.
Thank you. And again, I also want to express my delight at being able to be here, and for the people who put this on. Is it okay? All right. I want to take my opening remarks to kind of tell you who I am or a little bit about my background, because I'm hoping that there are a lot of people in the television audience that might be new to me. I'm 71 years old. I reside, for the past 17 years, I've resided in Cambria with my wife, Vicki. We just celebrated our 50th anniversary here last January. I have one son who lives in Los Osos and has a small winery with tasting rooms in Cambria. I'm retired from a 41-year career of a sales manager and owner of insurance agencies for State Farm Insurance. Prior to that, I was with the California Department of Corrections as an employee. And prior to that, I was with the Santa Clara County Probation Department. I hold a degree in sociology from San Jose State College with emphasis in correctional administration. I have a minor in abnormal psychology, which I believe is probably a very appropriate degree for a politician. I'm finishing up my sixth year with the Cambria Community Service District as a director there. I also represent special districts on LAFCO, which is the Local Agency Formation Commission. Prior to that, I was an elected director of the Santa Maria Public Airport District, and prior to that, a trustee for the Kern County Union High School District when I was in the Bakersfield area. I got into this race simply because Cambria and a lot of the communities along the North Coast are experiencing serious infrastructure repair and replacement problems. And I felt that the actions of our current supervisor, a very extreme no-growth position, was making it impossible for us that were involved in these infrastructure repairs to be able to finance them without putting excessive fees on our customers. See, I believe in what I would refer to as limited sustainable development. Because if you don't have new blood to a community, new residents, new businesses, you simply have a fairly stagnant community that simply has to add costs to its citizens. There was a couple of other reasons, and I am sure they're going to come up as the questions that we'll be talking about later this evening.
Thank you very much. All right, we will now begin the question and answer. We're going to start, and I'll tell you that we have an agreement amongst all of us participating that we are on a first-name basis. So I will start with John Eric and ask him to pose question number one, and Bruce, you will start.
At your pleasure, Madam Moderator. I mean, Jackie.
Why do you believe you are the best candidate for 2nd District Supervisor, and what attributes and qualities would you bring to the board in order to serve the county's best interests?
Well, I'm running on my record, and again, I touched on it in the opening. You know, the Los Osos Wastewater Project had suffered 30 years of controversy and failure, and I took office in 07 the day that the county took responsibility for that project, and we've been able to move it forward. I count that as a tremendous success, and it's going to be a great benefit to the community. You look then, in 07, things started going downhill from the county. We worked very hard as a board, and I was very much in the middle of drawing consensus for our board of how to deal with the worst economic times that we've seen in generations. We managed to come through, as I indicated, without layoffs and without major program cuts. In the midst of that, we got a library, a new branch library in Decambria, working with the community. And so each of those specific ones indicates my ability to reach out into our communities, to talk to people, to identify their needs, to work on problems, and to solve them. And again, those three things that I just mentioned are really just the tip of the iceberg in terms of a variety of things I've been involved with, whether it's the dust rule on the dunes, whether it's the seismic safety of Diablo Canyon, whether it's the ability to, ordinance that bans plastic bags to keep them out of our marine environment. So I believe I'm the best candidate because I have the experience and I have the skills to work with people, to identify problems, come to consensus where it can be had, and move forward. And, again, touching on vision, leadership, and service, those are things that I live, that I work very hard to bring to the 2nd District, to the county as a whole, and in my representing of the county to the outside world.
Okay. Thank you. Earl, same question.
Yes, in addition to having a rather broad-based background in overseeing public agencies, I believe that I'm really the best candidate because what I would bring to this office is an inclusionary attitude that I don't think is there now. I think that my success in business, my success in politics, has been the ability to sit down with people, to have them express what their problems are, have them work through particular solutions and come up with answers that everyone can support. I don't see that in the current supervisor. What I see in the current supervisor is a position that is his agenda, and if you don't agree with his agenda, then you don't get in the mix of things at all. I don't work that way. It's interesting that I'm supported by people who are on what would be called fairly liberal on one side and very conservative on the other. And that comes from ability to sit with them and have them honestly believe that what I'm doing is listening to their concerns and working with them. I, as a representative, do not come with an attitude of knowing exactly what the problem is. I, as your representative, will come to problems based on what information you provide me and how you see the problem. And we'll work through those things and come up with solutions. I then have had a very good track record of being able to follow up. And I guarantee to you that I will follow up on problems and make sure that you're involved and make sure that you have all the information. Thank you.
Thank you. Helen, our next question, please.
All right. Since the position of supervisor is nonpartisan, what role, if any, does the partisan politics play in the position of supervisor? And are you willing to make decisions that may depart from the viewpoints of the party to which you belong?
And I think that goes to Merle first.
Yes.
You know, I would have to say that one's commitment to a particular party does provide some basis for the background of decisions that you make. And let me give you an example. I was raised by a single mother with three children. She raised us on the salary of a secretary in the Kern County Probation Department. I'm the benefit of tax-supported public schools. I have the beneficiary of tax-supported public universities. I have benefited from support for things like FHA for my first home as a low down payment. I can't go back on the things that created me, and I can't go against those things. So when you talk about things like women's rights, and you talk about things to assist people to become successful, I'm going to be heavily involved in those things. Now, having said that, I also believe that all of these programs can be fiscally responsible and that they require proof of performance and that they lead to bringing people to success. And that's the way I measure those kinds of public programs. Now the question of allegiance to an actual party. First of all, I think that most party principles are fairly large generalizations and don't always take into account local circumstances. Understand that I understand that I am your representative on a local level for local situations, and that will take precedence over actual political party line types of situations. Thank you.
Thank you. Bruce.
Thank you. Thank you, Jackie. Let me speak directly to the question. Does partisan politics play a position in my role as supervisor? No, quite simply. You know, I have a different read of what that means than what Merle just gave you. That would mean that can quite plainly see that that's not the case as recently as a few weeks ago when we considered land use in Los Osos. And, you know, are you willing to make decisions that depart from the viewpoints of the party to which you belong? Sure. You know, I'm there to do what's best for my constituents and for the residents of this county. It's actually a matter of pride. I serve at the state level and talk to supervisor colleagues from Del Norte to Imperial County, and we pride ourselves in getting stuff done. We come together in our state association, and it doesn't really matter. And I think it is why local government is the most respected form of government that there is. You know, I can perhaps take a little bit more of my time to go back on something that Merle said, that he's looking for solutions that everyone can support. Well, bring that to Los Osos. Bring that to Cambria. There are times when we have very difficult decisions that need to be made, and acting in a nonpartisan way gives me the opportunity to survey which are not different than the principles that Merle spoke to a minute ago. I try to move forward for what's best for the most number of people. We are simply not going to get solutions in this day and age that everybody agrees to. We're just going to have to do the best we can, and the easier to do it in a nonpartisan way than tied to party politics.
Thank you. Jim, question number 3.
This is to Bruce, I guess.
Yes,
what do you consider the single biggest issue the 2nd District is currently facing, and what are your plans to
address? The topic of the day, literally, is drought and the water reliability of our communities. That's the thing that I am most concerned about. And every one of the communities in the 2nd District has a water supply issue. In the short term, in the medium term, and in the long term. And I'm already working in each of those communities, on each of those timescales. We are very active in Cambria as the county tries to help the community, Cambria CSD, get a drought emergency project in place. Later, they'll be working on a long-term solution. In Cayucas, that helped fire flows. Very important. Cambria water situation, not quite so dire. Morro Bay, we're working on infrastructure improvements down by the California Men's Colony that will secure the water supply for not only the area around the Men's Colony, Cuesta and Camp San Luis, but also potentially the city of Morro Bay. Much yet to be done on that. So that is the thing that's in front of us right now. We're seeing infrastructure that was put in as this country came out of World War II, the unchallenged It always strikes me since I was born just after the war that something is ending nearing the end of its useful life now, being that age, that's a little concerning. I like to concentrate on the useful part of that. But the infrastructure and the natural resources that get delivered by infrastructure, in particular water, sewage, those are things that I am working on. Those are things that I intend to continue working on in my next term.
Thank you. Merle.
On this question, you will find agreement between Bruce and myself. There, I do consider that really and, of course, the water supply that's part of that whole infrastructure situation. I would try to bring some of these groups together rather than solving. Right. As an example, right now we're working on a situation in Cambria to provide an emergency water supply there. But we're also thinking in terms of, if that works, expanding the possibility of that to a whole community or regional kind of a solution. And I think we're going to have to look is a great need, and we're trying to solve a very immediate problem in Cambria, but that could be expanded on to the other areas. Of course, water and sewer in Morro Bay, Cayucas, and Los Osos, although Los Osos system will probably be up and running almost about the time I would be going to office. The Morro Bay Cayucas decision has still got to be made, and how those people cooperate together to work out and really help from the county, and I would see bringing those people together to do that. Can we develop a grand strategy for the whole North Coast? I really think we can. And it's just a matter of all of the communities taking a look at trying not to do everything just on their own, but to try to do things in concert and come up with the best solution.
Thank you. Cecilia will pose our next question, and Merle, you'll answer first.
In the midst of a multi-year drought and lowering tables countywide, what do you believe Cimiento water projects, assuming allocations are available, and what alternatives to groundwater should District 2 communities consider?
Bruce alluded to the intertie pipeline that is being talked about, is in planning stages for assistance from the state and Nacimiento Water to the Chorro Valley area. And although I don't object to more of District 2 connecting to state or Nacimiento water, because simply building a pipeline to what could conceivably 6 months from now be a dry well, isn't a drought solution. It is a solution in terms of helping later times when things are normal, and giving flexibility, such as times when Morro Bay needs to shut down and from out-of-state water and use maybe such things as Nacimiento water. What we really do need to do is develop new water. We can't simply keep pipes. The cheapest, easiest, quickest way to develop new water is conservation, and I mean aggressive conservation. And we're going to have to do that in all of our communities, whether it's rain runoff collection, whether it's gray water systems, and all of, or whether it's rebates on equipment. We're going to have to put money into that. The second thing is recyclable water. We are dumping millions and millions of gallons of water in the ocean. Water that can be that we could foresee in the future. Ultimately, and it's probably quite a ways off, is some form of desalinization, but that would have to be a major regional project similar to Nacimiento and the Nacimiento pipeline as being a supply for the coastal area.
Thank you. Bruce.
Well, I think Merle misunderstands the intertie project that's recently had coverage in terms of its intent, which really is as a matter of water supply reliability and drought response. We'll come back to that if I have time. In a little different situation. Each community has a different source of supply or supplies. Each community has a different availability of infrastructure. You take Cambria, for instance, depends on some very shallow aquifers, and they are not near any pipeline whatsoever. So any solution is going to require a significant effort in that community. You come to Morro Bay, and Morro Bay is largely served by state water, groundwater, but they are near a couple of different pipelines. That opens up the ability to deal more portfolio, as I like to call it. What are the sources? We have Nacimiento. We have Santa Margarita Lake in the South County Lopez. We have state water coming in. We have groundwater in certain communities. We have the possibility of desalination, and we have the possibility of making use of recycled water. But each of those comes with a price tag and a significant one. Merle says conservation is the cheapest and the easiest. True. But in many communities, especially here on the North Coast, where we've been strapped for water for a long time, we are pushing the limits of conservation, certainly inside the house. Now, as we margin, but if you start talking gray water systems, start talking major recycled water systems, such as the one we're putting in with the Los Osos wastewater project, we will not discharge a drop of water to the ocean. It will all be reused or recycled. You start talking some serious, serious dollars. And I think each community is going to have to look very carefully at its assets and its challenges. And my role as a county supervisor is to help facilitate, especially across jurisdictional lines, the ability of each community to secure a reliable and, importantly, a
moderator's prerogative to do this. And I'll go to Merle, and it has to do with, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about, in recently, agricultural use of water in the North County. This is also an issue in the South County where we have higher agricultural use. Question number one is, do you believe that the county, all of us at the county, have a grasp on what is our water supply countywide? And what is your viewpoint and opinion with regard to agricultural use of water?
Maps that were presented for the North County situation, or the Paso Robles situation. I think we reasonably have the information that's available for us to take a look at what our actual water supply is. How it's being used is a little bit different, and the question becomes between agriculture and urban usage. And a lot of that is structured by law, and Santa Rosa and San Simeon Creek area. We understand that riparian rights of agriculture above us have priority over our use. That's a hard thing somewhat to deal with in urban communities because we've urbanized so much. And we got to keep a situation here where we're not in a total fight between agriculture and urban usage, but we do have to recognize that agriculture has some overlying rights over. Agriculture's right to their continuing the kind of use that they have used of water. I'm not, I think the county is moving towards the concept of restricting future use, and that might be an acceptable situation, but I don't believe that we have the right to order really the stoppage of that usage for agriculture as it exists.
Okay, thank you. Bruce.
Well, I think we have a general sense of what our water supplies are, and we have a general sense of what our water usage is. We need to refine that, and in particular, and that's a controversial subject, but I think the folks there who are suffering through very serious declines in well level are coming around to the idea that we need to know more, and metering is the first step. It takes water to do agriculture, but unlike Merle, I don't believe agriculture has an unlimited right to take the water. You know, in a forum last week, I posed Merle the hypothetical of a 100-acre grape grower across the road from a rural resident, and the significant irrigation of those grapes, pumping hundreds of acre feet of water a year, dry up the rural resident's well. Savings invested in their house? And to me, the answer is quite clearly no. The reality is it takes water to grow food. As a grower myself, a citrus grower, I know that. And it will always be the case that agriculture, to secure our food supply, is going to use more water than an urban user who is, you know, using it for daily needs and potentially some landscape irrigation. I don't want to pit agriculture against the urban users. I don't think that's in anybody's interest. But we are going to have to work on coming to a reasonable balance where the resources are being overtaxed. We're going to have to do both supply enhancement and demand reduction. And that's the effort that our board has already undertaken, and I'm hoping to see more of it in coming years.
Thank you for allowing me to insert that question. We will now go to John Eric with our next question.
Agriculture is a major economic driver in the county. Not only does it provide jobs, but it is an important component in the rural character of the county that also brings tourists and visitors to San Luis Obispo County. How would you keep local events ordinance?
And Bruce, you'll go first.
Okay. There are a number of ways in which I've been working to keep agriculture viable in this community, in this county. Regulation of agriculture is a sore spot with growers, and goodness knows I know that. I have to fill out forms for the regional board, the State Water Quality Control Board, when I was not organic, the Department of Pesticide Regulation, and a bunch of others. At the county level, we're doing what we can. We're fought very hard to get reasonable agricultural activities exempted from as much regulation as possible. The other thing that I've been talking about with our Economic Vitality Corporation is to look at the business side of agriculture. And as I look out through our county, you know, we don't have 1,000-acre farms for the most part here. We might have a couple of grape operations that are getting there, but we don't have the kind of big wheat fields they have in Kansas. Our local growers really operate as small businesses, and what occurs to me is we need to reach out through, like the Small Business Administration, to go into agriculture because we enjoy being outside, we enjoy working in the natural world, and that's the reward. But we also have to figure out how to make a farm profitable, and that's something that I want to work on. Ag tourism, I think, within a reasonable balance. Ag tourism is a fine thing, but remember, you got to have ag in order to have ag tourism. So I'm not interested in turning our rural areas over to an endless succession of event centers and commercial retail establishments, just so folks can get away from the city to go buy things that they could buy online. Our board, it's back for yet another revision and review. And again, my approach to events is a matter of balance. In the right place, at the right scale, they're fine and can be helpful.
Thank you. Earl.
Well, I think you keep farming and ranching profitable, and then you protect it. When a farmer and rancher can make a reasonable living, they have no incentive to sell off their property. If they can't make a reasonable living, the only incentive they do is really kind of does away with agriculture as a real industry. You know, I think we need to support the rights to use their lands and incentivize such things such as the Williamson Act so that they're protected from some of the taxation situations that can cause them some problems. I think we need to support opportunities for them to use their land in that business type of way that farm and selling their product to a wholesaler or a distributor. You're seeing farmers who are going through the whole process of growing the product and selling it at farmers market. You're seeing farmers who are growing the product and producing retail products from that situation, such as jams, jellies, all kinds of situations and opportunities, so that they can continue to be farmers first. I do support first, and then secondarily, what you're doing is educating people on the lifestyle of farming and the products that they produce so that when they go somewhere else, they will buy our products or products from this particular area, such as the same way we do with the wine industry. What I think we need to oppose is a lot of the restrictions, regulations, and rules that make that very difficult to do.
Thank you. Helen, our next question, please.
The housing. Have you read the survey, and would you, as county supervisor, support rezoning additional land for residential use to address the demands of home buyers?
Well, I believe that the county should provide a range of zoning options for people. I don't believe that the county should determine and allow only one type of housing. Now, when you talk about that for District 2, communities in District 2 are surrounded by major land holdings that aren't interested in rezoning. So what you're talking about in District 2 is a lot of infill single-family type lots that I think provide some opportunities for family situations in which families do want to raise their young families on these types of properties. There may be opportunities in other areas of the county, and would I consider it? Yes, I would consider it if all the resources and other items are I think that I don't believe that we should be squeezing people into a kind of a confined space so that everything has to be right there, right around them. And because I think the average person that has a family wants that space to have a safe place for their kids to play. And I would support that. And I think the single family lot development that we have available to structure up will be available to provide that resource.
Bruce.
Thank you. The question of housing here is obviously a big one, very important to our economy. And I've been proud to be a leader on the board in developing our strategic growth principles, which really speak to where are we going to put that housing and how are we going to facilitate it. And the short description of strategic growth is we're going to encourage development where it makes sense, in the sense of where is there infrastructure to support it, where are there resources to support it, where are there jobs to support the people that are for residential and potentially other uses, but the residential one is the one that keeps coming up. I will tell you in that update, I don't expect that we're going to see large tracts of green fields zoned for residential development in the old school. The detached single-family house on a quarter-acre lot, that is something that is going to be rarer in the future than it was in the past. I think it's important as we talk about the variety of housing mixes to really be accurate about what the EVC study says. It's not that people have a 97% preference for single family. This non-scientific survey said, sure, that would be acceptable. I mean, that's the American way, the American dream, your patch of green lawn and a three-bedroom, two-bath house, which was something else that came out of the study. But significantly, over 50%, 55, 56% of employees said that they would find multifamily housing acceptable. And about the same amount, somewhere in around 50%, said that they would find a mixed-use property acceptable. And so that's really got to read this study very carefully. The key to making these great places is having the open space that might be a park, a recreation center, having the libraries in place. So strategic growth and providing housing for our county is not simply about marking a zoning code on a map and saying, letting the developers go crazy on it. It's about thinking it through strategically.
Okay. Thank you. As a follow-up to that, a couple questions came up in some of the other forums, and I'll ask Merle to go first, and that is, what is your opinion about secondary dwellings, residential dwellings like granny units? Do you support that? And feel that there is a need, and would you support some type of a program or plan for workforce housing, particularly in the agricultural communities?
The county has kind of a quick planning process for granny housing or secondary housing on current single family lots. And I would support that. I don't have a problem with that situation at all. Now, when you come to workforce housing, restricted growth for such a long period of time, we have artificially inflated the value of everything beyond the point where people of average means are able to participate in the ownership. We somehow have to develop workforce housings for people who are average workers, not people who are transferring wealth from another area to this area, which is what has occurred in Cambria and Cayucas. It's probably beginning to occur more in Morro Bay and ultimately may artificially inflated the value of property by restricting supply. I think in the agricultural area, we have to find some way to provide a workforce housing that is a combination of workforce housing for people who are transitory workers and then also for people who have family situations that are full-time residents in the particular area. And I think we can do it through some standardized types of plans, maybe some expensive permitting process.
Thank you. Bruce.
Well, you speak first to Merle's views on affordability. He sounds like a supply-sider here, that we just need more supply in the coastal zone. Well, we have been very seriously constrained by resource issues in the coastal zone. And the reality, as I see it now, 20 years into public issues in this county, is that we will never supply our way to affordability. This place is just too beautiful a place to live. This county is too beautiful, and the North Coast in particular is just too nice a place to live. There will be an insatiable demand for housing. So we're not we need to work with communities to be sure that how they're set up fits with their vision. We need to work on, again, some of these other issues like the circulation of the extra traffic. Are we going to be able to do that near transit, such as we have in on the North Coast? Is it going to be compatible with the neighborhood? Those are the issues that we have to work first with the communities, and we'll do that through our community plan update. Workforce housing, I've been a big proponent of our affordable housing ordinance. I've been frustrated with my colleagues because they are a little bit hesitant, and I understand but don't completely agree with them. This EVC survey is that this is a big deal with employers. We need to get serious about workforce housing. I think there are ways of doing that. I think we need to engage the building community. This is something we need to work together, and people need to understand. It's in our best interest collectively to have places where our children can raise their families, where they can take on entry-level jobs and succeed. Not an easy thing to do, but one that I'm deeply committed to.
Thank you. Okay, next we'll go to Jim with question number 7.
Do you support San Luis Obispo?
As it's currently written, no, I don't support the ag cluster ordinance. For those of you who don't know, the idea is if you had a 160-acre piece of property that might otherwise qualify to be subdivided to 40-acre parcels, and each parcel might be allowed two houses on those parcels, then the current ag cluster ordinance almost guarantees you 8 houses clustered in one corner with a chunk of ag land preserved. I can understand the attraction of it when that came out in the 80s. It doesn't work. Protect agriculture. So I was again right at the forefront of the board's action to send that ag cluster ordinance back so that it be revised to accomplish the intent, which was as ag preservation. And in my view, it should be used very sparingly where there's a very clear conservation benefit that's going to be gotten by preserving a chunk of ag land. rural residents and agriculture don't mix. And the example out in Paso Robles where, irrigated agriculture is drying up rural residents' wells is a key.
Philosophically, it's a great idea, but I agree with Bruce. It doesn't work. It's going to have to come back. You're going to have to rethink the concept, and it just needs to go back to an overall drawing board and go back to the concept of how are we going to conserve agriculture and keep it into a probably a size that makes sense in terms of being viable. As I said, the philosophy was probably a wonderful idea, but again, the residential base on a large working type of farmer ranch hasn't worked out well, and so I would bring it back.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Cecilia, question number 8, and that will go to Muriel.
There are many people who complain that the SLO planning department is cumbersome. For example, even the process to build a single-family house takes too long and is too expensive. How well do you think project processing and policy
Talking to people within the community in the building and the real estate area, they all have this common complaint of too long and too expensive. Now, the question asks about how well do you think the project processing, planning, development are handled by the planning department? I think probably the planning department is handling the process that they've been given very well. The question ought to be whether that process should be changed. And that's where I projects, and by projects I mean even like, say, single-family homes that have gone through the planning process with no problems. I think with planning and the building industry sitting down, you could probably come up with a set of conditions in which a project that fits those conditions would be approved anyway. And so why isn't it an administrative approval of that type of project that would fit within those kinds of programs rather than going through this whole lengthy process? But I think just like I referred to the granny units that are pre-approved, maybe some planning time in finding pre-approved potentials would shorten the time, shorten the expense on the average type of property, and provide more planning time to look at the more exotic or the more difficult projects. And quite frankly, might get them through the process quicker because they also have then more time to look at it.
Thank you. Bruce.
Those who don't do it for a living. We are actually in the process now of streamlining that process where we can. We have a subcommittee of the board working with our planning department to see where we can cut the time for things to be done. We have instituted new levels of permit. Those of you in the county in the coastal zone may be familiar with the minor use permit process that's needed for a lot of residential development, even remodels. That used to start at a $4,500 to $5,000 proposition and require a hearing. We've instituted a minor use permit or under certain circumstances, much quicker to process. I think it's a great goal to make land use decisions faster, fairer, and more predictable. And that's something that we work very hard to get our general plan crafted properly and to do all the analyses that have to do as we make land use decisions. The reality is that we are constrained by a couple of things, and not the least of which is state law. The California Environmental Quality Act requires that we do a certain level of analysis. And whether you like it or not, CEQA's a applicant to be sure that CEQA is done right. Understanding what it takes to do it right is a matter of education, and that's actually something that one of the first steps in making the process faster, more consistent, and more predictable is to work with our applicants to let them understand what lies ahead of them. A lot of folks, once they get it, can provide the information that's necessary and dramatically cut their processing time.
Thank you. Okay, our next question, John Eric, number 9.
The current draft of the updated housing element of the county general plan calls for more than 50% of the on the, quote, Tri-W site, unquote, proposed sewer treatment plant location adjacent to the South Bay Community Center. Do you support or oppose this planned usage?
Okay, Bruce, you're first on that one.
Thank you. First of all, I have to question the premise of that question. I don't know that that's the case. I have not seen the draft of the housing element that indicates that, and off the top of my head, that doesn't sound accurate. I mean, we'll have to look at what's there. Particularly, citing units on the Tri-W site, the Midtown. So the wastewater permits. I think there might be some confusion here. It doesn't seem at all reasonable that half of the very low-income housing in the entire county is going to be visited upon Los Osos, whether it's on the Midtown site or elsewhere in the community. So I think we need to do a little fact-checking on that before we weigh in on where we go with it.
So let me just follow up. Is there any low-income housing that's designated for Los Osos? Well, I don't know what the questioner's concern is, but
what's required in our housing element is to show that there is adequate land all the way down to very low. Basically, that means we have to show an inventory of residential multifamily land, of residential single-family land at densities that will allow us to potentially do affordable housing, whether by design or whether through the incentives of our affordable housing program. We don't have an overlay that says this site is going to be affordable housing. That's up to the applicant. And the applicant has various ways of making a project work. We've done a couple, you may well know, down in Napomo, a nonprofit company that specializes in affordable housing has done a opportunity, and then letting the private sector or the nonprofit sector take that opportunity and develop what we need.
Okay, thank you. Muriel.
Well, I too questioned the when I saw the question, because I'd not heard of a proposal to put 269 units on the Tri-W site, because again I also assumed that the Tri-W site was part of the sewer treatment solution and wasn't necessarily for housing. If you go I think the communities, and I can speak from the standpoint of the community of Cambria, we have a project that's in the process of going through of a 40-unit low-income housing that has been turned over to the People's Self-Help Group that is providing the actual facilities. And I think it's important that as the county that we do designate sites within each of the communities so that there will be low-income
Thank you. Helen, question number 10.
If you were presented with a financially viable plan to incorporate Los Osos, would you support it or oppose it, and why?
Muriel.
If there's a financially a viable plan for a community, especially one that's already has some form of governmental agency, such as the community service districts that exist throughout the county, I would support it. That they can financially, and if they can show that they can financially support themselves, then they should be the one making the decision. Because as you think about it, Los Osos decisions are made by four people who don't reside in Los Osos or don't reside in the District 2. If they're a city, then you have five or assuming five people who reside in that community are responsible to that community. When it's closest to the public, and so I would support it.
Thank you, Bruce.
Well, absolutely. Local control is a fundamental and a powerful American democratic principle, and so a financially viable plan, voted on by the people and acted on by the proper authorities, sure, that's to be supported. People should govern themselves locally if they can. I think we have to really look at the reality of finding a financially viable plan. Los Osos is a wonderful community. It has many amenities, but it does not have a huge It has property taxes. That would be part of it. But the reality of incorporated cities today is about sales tax. And you see the what's called the monetization of land use is why you see a lot of box stores within city limits. And I think it would be a great challenge for Los Osos to come up with a plan that would be financially viable.
Okay. Thank you. Jim has our next question. It looks like we had some people from Los Osos who sent in a series of questions. So next question.
What, if any, level
Thank you. Right now, the current draft plan shows a build-out population of a little over 19,000, and I'm completely supportive of that. Right now, the population is around 15,000 or so, depending on how you draw the boundaries. To get to that, though, we have challenges ahead. They are wrapped up with the infrastructure issues, the sewer. There are three very important conditions that I'm working very hard to get solved so that the many undeveloped lots that have been waiting to develop for 30 years in Los Osos can. One of them is we have to come up with a water basin management plan. Blessed, some people might have another adjective for that, to have a number of important, rare, threatened, listed species. That is going to be headed to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service near the end of May, and I'm going to be working very hard to get that out of their review process and it on board. And then the last thing we need to do is to update our local coastal program, and that's a very arduous process through the Coastal Commission. I am convinced we can do it. I'm hopeful we can do it very close to when the sewer becomes operational, point of fairness, and also for the economic vitality and the building of a great community out there. And I would offer you those thoughts as a direct rebuttal to Merle's suggestion that I am a no-growth supervisor.
Merle.
As, It's true that about 19,800 is the projected build out from the draft basin plan. The one problem, though, that's going to exist is the water situation. Years. Hopefully, the wastewater plant will help out in terms of being able to pump the upper aquifer. But the fact of the matter is, we're probably going to have to take a look at the water situation in Los Osos before we come to that conclusion that 19,800 is the number. There's been a varying a number of 26,000 down to the to nothing of the 14,000 or so that are there now. This basin plan, I think it probably has to be the basin plan probably has to be strengthened from what it is right now. And at that point, you can probably make the decision. I, too, am absolutely supportive of infill development in Los Osos. I think and it's not only a fairness issue, it's a fairness to the people who are already there who are footing the bill, some massive bills right now for the sewer plant, because one of the ways to cut the cost of to the current residents of the the high cost increased customer base will be an overall reduction and a help to the people. The other items that Bruce mentioned are probably solvable. The water one is a little more expensive, and probably we're going to have to take a look at how to solve that.
As a follow-up, you both mentioned the 19,800 build-out and that you both support infill. What is your view on a larger number than that for development in Los Osos?
I think it's unlikely that a larger number is going to fly with the can find the water to support that level of build-out. Some work yet to be done, but it's very, very clearly looking over the Los Osos Community Plan, a process that started many, many years ago. It was pretty quickly determined that the previous build-out idea of 28-some thousand is just not practical in the real world.
Okay. Muriel?
True. It's really not practical to the on the 28,000 in terms of resources. The 19.8 is probably okay, but again, once with that number is probably okay, but I'd want to verify it.
Okay, thank you. Our next question is posed by Cecilia, and it's number 12.
Supervisor Gibson and many in the community opposed the drive-through at the Los Osos McDonald's, in part on the grounds that Los Osos should be walkable. Should the county build more sidewalks here to accomplish that goal?
Okay, Merle, you have that one first.
I also oppose the rest. Because it was a change of use of a building from a very low water user to a very, very high water user. And I didn't feel that the offsets that were being considered were sufficient to offset the increased water usage of the change of use of that particular building. Now, as to whether Los Osos should be a walkable community and should you build sidewalks, if you decide that that's going to be a walkable community, you better build a lot of sidewalks. It's kind of catch-as-catch-can alongside the road. It's uneven surfaces. You have a population that might find it very difficult to traverse a lot of that area. I think before you build any kind of a sidewalk things, I think you need some form of local transportation within that community, such as Cambria has a community bus, Morro Bay you have a trolley. I think that you can probably move people to that central business district that way. Basically, single-family residents spread out over an area that you would have to build a tremendous amount of sidewalks to accomplish the goal you're talking about.
Thank you. Bruce.
Yes, absolutely. You should build more sidewalks. The interesting and challenging question then gets to be where, how are we going to get these projects in place, and who's going to pay for them? And it really all comes down to those things. I'm encouraged. There's some opportunity in the right place. When the entire rest of the block doesn't have it, it may be a little bit of a hard sell. We do have cooperative road improvement. A process that we use a lot in Cambria to pave streets. We could consider something very similar to that if neighbors wanted to come together to assess themselves for walkability. That could work. There are some really exciting opportunities, and I was pleased to work with one of the nonprofit groups in Los Osos. I believe it was Celebrate Los Osos, who has a great vision of doing a Bayside Trail from the Baywood Pier, if you know where that is, to the Sweet Spot. Excitement from a variety of sources. It's that kind of public walkway that I have experience, you know, looking for funding that comes from outside the community, the Coastal Conservancy, various wildlife and environmental agencies have funds to do that sort of thing. So, again, when it comes down to that very tough question as to who pays, we are going to really work hard to figure out a match. And I have great hope. I have great faith in the communities of this district. And the example I'll quote to you, is here. Didn't have to do that. That's not even, you know, it's not even a county property. It's a piece of state park. But that community cared so much about that pier, they said, we're going to pledge $100,000 to its full restoration. That started last 4th of July. They've raised over $500,000. And we're hard at work with them. And it's that kind of community commitment that absolutely gets the attention of other funding agencies. So look forward to working on that.
Thank you. Okay, our next question is John Eric, number 13.
Excuse me. Do you support or oppose the current if any?
So we'll start with Bruce, and if you might want to explain. I think many people won't know what this is, and you might explain that a little bit.
Okay. Well, the background on that is that the Los Osos groundwater basin is being overdrafted. More water is being pumped out than can be sustainably supplied. The result is seawater intrusion. That is the result of actions by the three water purveyors in that community. The county is in litigation with them, as is the general rule in state law, to come up with a solution, which I'm very proud I can say at 7:18 in the afternoon, evening, is underway, which is basically how do we craft a plan that's going to fix this. We have released a draft of the plan. Because this is a matter of litigation, I don't have an opinion on that draft water plan because it is the matter of closed session negotiations between our board and the other entities that are part of the litigation. What I do know, though, from the technical information that I've reviewed, is that we can balance this basin with existing resources in the Los Osos groundwater basin.
One of the advantages of not being a seated supervisor in a situation like this is that I can express somewhat of an opinion. The draft basin plan is, as Bruce has indicated, an attempt to stabilize the basin through this, and I'll try it, interlocutory, and I'll stop there because Bruce,
ISJ is what we usually
yeah,
call
they usually call the ISJ. I didn't know what that was for a long time until I have read the draft basin plan. I do think it does provide some roadmaps towards stabilizing the basin. The only critique I have of it is that I think it is probably understated in what it can do. I think it could do more. I think it could be a stronger plan, especially in the areas of the conservation. It does ask here what you would support, and I also the sustainability group made some comments on the plan. And I tend to agree with kind of their summary, which indicated that they thought the most cost-effective program was the options of the conservation and Program D, which was fairly easy to implement. And so that would probably be my solution to the situation. And I understand that Bruce's position and accepted.
Supervisor seems to change a lot recently. What will you do to ensure that you have the ability to see that District 2 isn't dominated by outside interests?
Okay, Merrill, that's you first.
The Board of Supervisors is made up of five individuals representing five potentially different constituencies. As a supervisor, it is extremely important that you have the ability to discuss and communicate and yourself as an individual member of the board without the support of your four colleagues and find yourself in a very difficult position relative to supporting your particular your area. And I think maybe when you first went on the board, Bruce, or I'm trying to think back that long, one might have found himself in that kind of a position, and that's a difficult one to be in. I do think that I do have the ability that we have a reasonable representation, reasonable understanding of where I would be coming from, so that we don't get into the position of being that isolated board member who, in effect, can get nothing done for the zone area.
Thank you. Bruce.
Well, it sounds like a question coming out of the McDonald's decision of a few weeks back. I mean, the short answer is advocate. I mean, that is the first part of my job, is to advocate for the people who elected me. And I take that very seriously, and I do that to the greatest extent. That has worked exceptionally well. The challenge we have comes from our state's Open Meeting Act, which is called the Brown Act. And that means that outside of an open session, I can only talk to one other of my colleagues. And I will tell you that our board respects that absolutely. So, you know, it gives me limited opportunity to set up a decision. I simply can't do that until we get into open session. But I think I have ample evidence that I'm capable of that. We have probably taken enough votes that, oh, let me guess, 200 or 250 individual votes have been cast by our board, and there have been like four no votes out of those 250, and we have gotten the job done. That's advocacy behind the scenes with one colleague and open session advocacy on getting the job done, and that has worked. On the McDonald's thing is particularly frustrating to me. You know, it happens that on any given day a colleague is going to be wrong. And it's just unusual that all four of my colleagues were wrong on this.
Because I think this is something that people have a perception that there are voting blocks on our Board of Supervisors that are aligned through party politics or some other issue. And I'll give Merle a chance to talk about this and then Bruce. But do you think that that's true? Do you think that there are voting blocks, and what's your feeling about that? And how do you think you will fit in with regard to decision-making with your colleagues?
That supervisors represent an area in which the same interest is available, and so therefore you end up with certain voting blocks. It appears to me that over the past few years there has not been a specific voting block, because there are many times where we've waited for the fifth vote to see where it would go one way or the other. You know, I don't think that there's probably unfeelings about certain incidents, and it appears to be voting blocks. But I'm not going to make any particular charges that there are very specific voting blocks.
Okay, Bruce.
I don't see particular voting blocks. I think if you follow the board, you'll hear the philosophical approaches of each five of the supervisors, and how we interpret a given situation sometimes come down. And again, I'll go back, as painful as it is, I'll go back to McDonald's, there wasn't a block there. You know, I think one of the things that's not well understood by the public, you know, in terms of decision, 90% of our decisions are unanimous. At least that's a number that Supervisor Ray quoted, I think, in a forum a while back. I have no reason to dispute that. Most everything we do is unanimous, because it's get the job done time. You know, the ones that get the press are some of these higher profile legislative and quasi-judicial decisions. It used to be that there was great deference given to the supervisor of the district, and one might run their own little fiefdom. That is not the case anymore, and I think it's reflective of our is deeply intertwined. I mean, I wish some days they would defer to me, but, you know, I've asked and just haven't gotten a great response on that.
Okay, thank you. We'll go to Jim now with question number 15.
Okay, Los Osos residents, please understand this is not my question. I'm simply reading it. Many residents would like a dog park in Los Osos, which is otherwise a dog-crazy, dog-friendly town. What would you do to make this happen?
Okay, Bruce, that's your first on that one.
Well, that quarter of acre of land that would be suitable. We had that experience in Cayucas. As you drive north on Highway 1, right about where the Cayucas Cemetery is, right in front of the cemetery, is a little strip of land that's now Norma Rose Park, named after a wonderful woman who tirelessly advocated up to her passing within the last year or so for this to be a public park. Quite frankly, the county doesn't have all the funds it's going to take to develop that park. And we had a wonderful group of dog lovers who came forward to suggest a dog park there. It wasn't part of the initial plan. Also commissioned to find that that was substantially the same as a park, as other park facilities. They solicited the materials and labor. They built a 7,500-square-foot dog park for something like $7,500. They also then worked with our Parks Department to accept the maintenance responsibility of them, in not only the dog park, but the restrooms that we were subsequently able to install there. So it's a matter of community will. We just need to find a patch of relatively level ground, and we'll go for it.
Okay, great. I'm going to expand the question. What about a skate park?
Community effort, dedicated community members before my time in office who identified a great recreational opportunity. In Cayucas, same thing, great community members have built a makeshift one down by our Vets Hall that gets a huge amount of use. And Norma Rose Park, although it's been a little controversial with some folks in the neighborhood, the plan for Norma Rose Park is a skate park there. We have actually a chunk of funding. We need to get more of it so we can actually make an entire park out of it, and that's just really a phasing opportunity.
Thank you. Muriel.
People, all they need is the property. And that was what Cambria Community Service District provided to Mr. and Mrs. Heller. And they rallied the troops, built the park, provided for the maintenance of it. We're in the process of it being moved to a new location. They have handled the funding of that location. So if you're talking about in Los Osos for a dog park, what you ought to be talking about is probably turn that into a particular park. If you can find a piece of county-owned property, that would be the easiest way to go. I don't think Los Osos has a park authority, or do you have park authority? If you do, find a piece of property that Los Osos owns, and what you will find is that the people will do that. Same way with a skateboard park. Skateboard park in Cambria, completely built by volunteers, managed by volunteers, maintenance handled by volunteers. Up until the one guy who headed it up has left the area, and so the Community Service District picked up some repairs of it at the present time. But the community will supply the equipment and the time and the energy to do this, and as a supervisor or through the Los Osos Community Service District, we need to find the location.
Thank you. Our next question is being posed by Cecilia, number 16.
Do you support the nascent efforts in Sacramento to regulate groundwater, or do you believe that local agencies can handle it?
Yeah.
I will always believe that local agencies can handle and are best equipped to handle local problems. Anytime that you move up levels, and if you move to the level of the state, you will find situations in which there just isn't the understanding of what's going on in your community. And you have an interesting situation in Los Osos where you have local control of part of your water supply, and then basically another water supply purveyor who gets their control from the state, from the Public Utilities Commission. And I think you will find that probably you would have greater influence over your local provider than you would by going to the State Public Utilities Commission meeting and arguing against rate increases as compared to arguing about them with your own local elected representatives. So I constantly believe, again, that government at the lowest level can do the job and should do the job and should not pass it on to higher levels or not allow higher levels to take it over because you failed to do the job.
Thank you. Bruce.
Well, the governor's made it clear that if local agencies don't take care of groundwater management, the state will step in. And the question is, how are they going to craft that? And I'm quite deeply engaged in that conversation through both our State Association of Counties and directly on initiatives that the county has put forward. Our state association convened a meeting with the governor's staff. I was present in Sacramento arguing for the kinds of modifications to existing groundwater regulation that would give local governments the proper tools to deal with it. And the details get a bit wonky, but basically the state has proposed some tools. They don't always work well. But I'll tell you, this governor is absolutely of a philosophic bent to push authority and responsibility to local jurisdictions where it makes sense, and for them it makes sense to do groundwater. So a lot of details to be worked out. The other thing I'm very much involved with is keeping this county's efforts at solving the both the Los Osos groundwater basin, but also the Paso Robles groundwater basin, moving forward. And I will be in Sacramento next week testifying before the one of the assembly committees on our efforts to get a water district put in place over the Paso Robles groundwater basin. It is that kind of governing structure that's run by the individuals who are responsible for that resource and take the benefit of that resource to move forward. And I think we can be successful, but it's going to be a lot of effort to keep the message channels open to the folks in Sacramento who don't always have their ear to the ground in San Luis Obispo County.
Okay. Thank you. Question 17, John Eric.
Some local residents in Los Osos, again, have proposed a public takeover of Golden State Water. Do you support or oppose this?
Bruce.
Well, I'll tell you what I support right now is figuring out why Golden State Water's rates are 60% higher than those of the Los Osos CSD. I have fought on that score for literally a number of years. In my time in office, Golden State's come forward with at least a couple of rate cases to go to the Public Utilities Commission. You may know that Golden State Water is a publicly regulated utility. What, for the life of me, I don't understand is what their justification for those rate increases are. Their paperwork does not spell that out, much less indicate what they're going to do to balance the water basin. I don't understand why Los Osos is hooked in with the Edna Valley with a similar set of rates. And I don't understand why a public utility like Golden State Water is guaranteed a 7%+ rate on return on investment. Now, I sort of understand that, but I don't like it. You know, water is a common resource. Water supply is a basic human need. The idea of a publicly regulated for-profit utility, investor-owned, is a construct out of the last century. I think we need to ask some very hard questions about how Golden State conducts its business in Los Osos and to what benefit they are to the residents of that community. At this point, the conversation on the buyout idea is just starting. I'm going to be watching that. I don't have a position for or against whether that makes sense at this point. You may know from the press reports that a group in Ojai had similar frustrations to those that residents are expressing right now. They went through with an assessment and an eminent domain action, and that is being contested in court now in the appeals process by Golden State Water. So there's a lot to learn about this and a lot more to track, but I've been very consistent in trying to get some sense to the water rates that Golden State charges.
Okay. Thank you. I mean, if there were the possibility to exercise an eminent domain right, would you support that?
It, again, we have to have the full set of information. It's a matter of cost, and it's a matter of process. It's a matter of justifying a variety of steps, and it's a very long process. It is not to be undertaken lightly. You know, OHI is pushing it forward. I think at this point we need to see how that plays out.
All right. Thank you, Merrill.
This is another kind of question that falls in the same thing of local control, which is my tendency to support local control. I believe that as this process goes forward and information comes about as to why these rates are so dramatically different and whether a coordinated oversight of the basin is an advantage to the community, I will continue to support them fact-finding, finding information, deciding whether there's a financial advantage to the citizens, and if there is, I would support it. I'm very familiar with the OHI situation. My former business partner is one of the leaders in that, and he 5 years ago gave my name to some people in Los Osos, and I constantly hear from about this particular issue. It is a long process. It is a difficult process. It is a legal process, and it's the people need to understand that they're going to have to go through this process, and they're going to have to go along the way prove that it is a process that will benefit the community and the people of Los Osos. But I strongly support their right to do that and to look at it and to make an informed decision as a local control.
Thank you. Our next question is number 18. Helen?
Should the county move to stop OHV activity on the Oceano Dunes?
Okay, I think that's off-highway vehicle activity on the Oceano Dunes. And Muriel, you have that question first.
This is an activity that's gone on for years and years and years, and there's a lot of questioning now about the as the population rises in the Pomo Mesa area as to health concerns and things. I think probably that some modification of the off-road vehicle activity should take place. It is one of the few places on the beach where vehicles can run rampant. It's also one of the few places in the state of California where you can get a drunk driving charge or a alcohol vehicle charge, because that is technically a part of the state highway system. There's been a lot of usage of that property that probably should be under some greater control, and it's an issue that's coming about, and it may be settled just from the standpoint of the dust rules of the APCD and such, but probably ultimately some modification of their rules on that is going to be needed.
So it sounds like you wouldn't advocate to completely disallow any type of off-highway use, but you believe it should be monitored somehow or controlled.
Yes, I wouldn't ban it, but I don't think you can allow it just to go totally without some kind of controlling.
Okay, thank you, Bruce.
Thank you. Well, what the county needs to do is work with the Air Pollution Control District and state parks to reduce the dust coming off the riding area to natural levels or below. And it's not about banning OHV use. That's not my form of recreation. It's about the public health risk and the detriment to the public health of folks downwind from the dunes. And it is beyond conclusive that riding on the dunes causes an increase in fine particulate matter in the air. And that's why the APCD moved. It actually did that while I was chairing the Air District Board to put in place a rule. And the essence of that rule is very fair. It is to reduce the state parks. And we have, a lot of details as to how that's measured and how that's put forward. State parks initially resisted that, and it was very frustrating. I think now we've been through litigation. We have a settlement that I think puts us on a much better direction. So I'm hopeful that we can start making some progress there. But you'll notice if you pay attention to the air districts, announcements that we've had already a couple of days of elevated particle matter in the air, violating state standards, I'm sure, downwind of the dunes. We need to get going on that. The county itself, as opposed to the APCD, and we take that responsibility serious. We start seeing progress from state parks. I think we'll be very pleased. But again, it's not about banning the riding of vehicles there. It's about reducing the dust.
Okay. Thank you. Our next question will be posed by Jim. It's number 19.
Do you favor relicensing the Diablo Canyon nuclear plant?
Bruce, you have that one.
Right. So I've been very, very clear on my position of relicensing. Before I'm ready, safety of the residents of this county. There are actually three major issues that are being considered regarding Diablo Canyon. One of them is their use of seawater for cooling. Billions of gallons a day goes through that plant, and its impacts on the marine environment is much greater than I think was originally thought. That's a welfare question maybe for residents of this county because we care about our environment, but that's really playing out more at the State Water Board level. The two things that I'm particularly concerned about are the safe storage of the spent fuel, and I have been pressing carrying more fuel than the original design, and how fast can those spent fuel rods get moved into dry cask storage, which is a much safer on-site means of storing fuel. I've had a couple of discussions with the chairman of the NRC, Allison McFarland, Dr. Allison McFarland, a very sharp and engaged person who I think gets the concern of that. The bigger issue to me and one that I've been more actively involved in is the earthquake risk to Diablo Canyon. Post-Fukushima, we have to reexamine everything we think we know about what an earthquake might of some very extensive geophysical work to understand the fault systems and the geologic tectonics of that area. I serve as the county's representative on the independent peer review panel that looks over their work to confirm that it fairly represents the situation. This is a connection with my first career as a seismologist, and I think it's of the utmost importance. So those questions get answered. We'll talk about the position on relicensing.
Okay. Thank you. You're all.
I think it's true that there are some is an important issue to make people feel comfortable that there's not a excessive problem. The once through cooling situation. It'll probably have to be solved, but again, like Bruce says, it'll be solved probably at the regional water, state water board. I also think that even though we don't have the actual regulatory authority in some of these areas, spent fuel ought to go into dry cask, and we also should be advocating on the federal level that they come through and do what they originally planned to do of moving that dry cask storage off of the premises here. There's a fault of the federal government of not meeting its responsibilities for safety to each and every one of us. However, though, I have probably a reasonable belief that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission will go through determinations and allow relicensing. I'm acceptable. That's acceptable to me. I don't have the technical knowledge or background myself, so I, like you, have to rely on the commission and agencies that we trust, and so I will rely on the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to make that finding. And if they make the finding that it's safe, then I would support relicensing.
Okay.
On the Sosa's Valley Road corridor to the 101, not gaining any additional traffic?
No.
Short answer is no. We've talked about potential build-out. We've talked about the fact that that Los Osos is one of the communities where there is a reasonable ability to find reasonably priced homes and such. I would not expect that there would be any less traffic in the area between San Luis and Los Osos. In the actual interchange corridor, that is going to be is under completion of the adding the additional lanes there, and so the problem will be solved a little bit, but there's still going to be a lot of traffic flow because there's going to be increased development within with increased commercial development within that area. So no loss. Lower than it has now.
Bruce.
Well, you know, population increases, and I guess the certainty of traffic increasing with it is sort of right up there with death and taxes. You know, we're going to have to deal. I do see some interesting trends emerging, though. RTA ridership is up remarkably in the last few years. Part of that is economic. Part of that is a very capable also seeing the younger demographic turn more toward public transit. You know, the trends are that younger folks are driving less miles. That they are delaying getting their driver's license and maybe a little bit less dependent on the single-occupant automobile. So maybe there's a little hope with our youth.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah, maybe.
You're looking at me. I'm
maybe. Yeah, well, you're in that demographic, yeah.
Gee, thanks, Bruce. All right, we have our last question, and it's a simple one, so we're getting short.
I have a ranch that's in the Williamson Act, and it's a big deal for agriculture. It is, you know, the basis of it is that our property taxes are calculated on the agricultural productivity of the land and not its market value. For most properties within this county, that means a substantial reduction of property taxes, which is absolutely a key ingredient of trying to make an ag operation profitable. I will say that I cannot vote on matters concerning the Williamson Act in this county because of my property being there. But I will and absorbing the $1 million loss of revenue that occurs because the state doesn't support the Williamson Act, doesn't give what's called a subvention to the county. Our county general fund suffers to the tune of $1 million, and every colleague I've served with has been solid on keeping that going, and I think they've made an excellent decision in that regard. It's the cheapest, most effective way to protect ag land, at least in the medium term.
And protect family
and
owned
protect farmy farm, protect family farms and so forth.
Yeah.
I absolutely support member board supervisors. In a previous forum, Mr. Gibson indicated that a affinity with agriculture, but indicated he couldn't vote on some of these issues like the Williamson Act. Not being an agriculturist, I would be an active supporter of the Williamson Act as an individual that isn't constrained by that, and I feel that I could be a good supporter of agriculture because of that.
Remarks, and we will start with Bruce and end with Muriel.
Okay, thank you. Jackie, it's been a pleasure to be with you this evening, and thanks again to the Latino Outreach Council for putting this together. This ability to come to a town hall and to debate the issues of the day is fundamentally American, and it is actually one of the things I very much enjoy about our political process and about the business of campaigning. I hope you've seen, as we've discussed, a real interesting range of issues tonight, that I am the candidate that is qualified, both by experience and accomplishment. Those things, like the Los Osos Wastewater Project, the new library in Cambria, the fiscal management of the county through tough economic times, the reform of our pension system, the institution of the dust rule, the banning of plastic bags that are so important to keeping a pure marine environment, the work with the community on the chip seal issues on Highway 1. These are things that I'm very proud to have accomplished. I would submit they indicate my style of working, inclusive with a wide range of communities here. Does everybody agree with the leadership and the service ethic to continue to serve the second district well? This is the most interesting job I have ever had. I love this county. I love this job. I ask for your vote on or before June 3rd, and I thank you again for being here this evening.
Thank you, Bruce. Muriel.
I, too, want to thank you, Jackie, for moderating this meeting. And, again, this is our fourth couple. Of opinion, and yet come across so that you can see how we deal with each other and how we would probably deal with our compadres on a board. I think the difference, and I've always said this, I think the difference is one of how you approach certain things. I think I would approach things a little bit differently than Mr. Gibson, and I would do that from the standpoint of being very inclusive in what the issues are and being available. What's going on in the district? Mr. Gibson has never been to community. I've been on the community service at Cambria for 6 years. Mr. Gibson has never come to a meeting to express concerns about our water situation or such. I appreciate his concerns in the last month or so, and I appreciate his help in the last month or so, but I attribute that more to an aggressive campaign than a lot of the the past history on that. I ask you to participate in this whole process by talking with your neighbors, your friends, and expressing your opinions about what you've heard here tonight. Again, thank you for the opportunity to be here, the opportunity to express an opinion, and I thank all of you who've taken your time tonight to come, and I thank all of you in the Ultimate TV audience who will expend your 2 hours to hear the differences between the two of us. Thank you very much.
Both of these candidates for extending yourself to serve the public. It's very much appreciated. Thank you to our panelists. I'd like to remind everyone that our next candidate forum is on May 14th. It is the County Clerk Recorder Candidate Forum. It will be at 5 o'clock with the social, 6 o'clock the forum will start, and it will be at the County Board of Supervisors Chamber Room. And I hope that everyone will come to our Friday night, this Friday night, Fiesta Latina, to have a fun dinner and do some dancing and listen to some great mariachi music. Once again, thank